Hello and welcome. You are tuned into another edition of Mountain Song and Story right here on Radio Bristol. I'm your host, Tony Doman, and here on this program, each and every week, I find and feature different themes relating to Appalachian culture, and then I play songs and feature stories all about a topic of choice. I also love to invite guests on the show all the time to talk about things that they are doing in and around the region. Well, it is mid-October. Halloween is right around the corner, and today's show and next week's, I will be airing some personal spooky stories of Birthplace of Country Music friends and staff. We all have a spooky or scary story. Sometimes they're unsettling. Some of them we just know by heart or we've heard our entire lives. And I have had a lot of fun speaking with folks and collecting their stories for this month's shows. So please stick around and stay tuned this hour here on Mountain Song and Story. It's going to be a variety of different voices and stories of things that go bump in the night. First up, we're going to get some fitting music going, and then we're going to get into some of these stories. Here you go. Here is Sturgill Simpson with The Dead Don't Die.
Oh, the dead don't die any more than you or I. They're just ghosts inside a dream of a life that we don't know. They walk around us all the time, never paying any mind to the silly lives we lead. For the reaping we've all sown, there's a cup of coffee waiting on every corner. Someday we're gonna wake up and find the corner's gone, but the devil'll still be walking around this whole world alone. Cause afterlife is over, the afterlife goes on. There'll be old friends walking around in a somewhat familiar town that you saw once when you looked up from your phone. Nobody by the same height, and you can save all your goodbyes. Stop trying to pretend that we're all not at home, and the streets look so empty in the morning. There'll be no one out at night for the lights to shine down on, but the devil'll still be walking around in this whole world alone. I'll life is over, the afterlife goes on. Hearts break with loved ones' journey on. At the thought they're now forever gone, so we tell ourselves they're all still around us all the time. Oh, we're not forgotten, just memories left behind. But the dead'll still be walking around in this old world alone. Come life is over, the afterlife goes on. Our afterlife is over, the afterlife goes on.
All right, so I'm here now with Renee Rogers. Welcome, Renee.
Hiya, Tony. I almost said welcome, Tony.
Welcome, Tony.
Welcome to your own show.
So Renee has some really, really great ghost stories that I am so excited that you're here and going to tell us about some of them. Let's start with the first one. Back, you have a tale that you heard back in college, and it's about... Well, why don't you just tell us about it?
Yeah, this is one of those friend of a friend's, but it's such a good story.
The best kind of stories, yeah. Secondhand.
And, you know, like, because it's friend of a friend, I was always told that it really happened, but, you know, some other people might have heard a version of this story, but it's a good one. So my friend told me, the story was, is that there was this girl, and all through her life, she, her childhood and her, like, early teen years and all that, she had had a recurring dream, not like a nightmare. It was just a recurring dream where she was in this house, and it was this white farmhouse, and she was just walking through the house, and she would have it just every once in a while. And, you know, sometimes she'd, and by the time she'd had, and it wasn't always like the same dream over and over again that she just walked through the exact same way, but it was like always in that same house.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of, like, that's scary. Like, having the same dream with the same house.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. But, you know, I have recurring dreams that have, like, the same theme and very similar sort of setting. So, I mean, I think that's a pretty common thing. But it was, and it wasn't a scary dream. She never felt scared in it. Anyway, so later in her life, like, when she was, like, in her 30s or something, she was driving somewhere, and she was... not where she actually, it wasn't a place that she was familiar with, so she was sort of driving to a new place, and her car broke down, and it was out, like, sort of in an area where there were a lot of farms and stuff, and she hadn't passed a gas station in a while, and she didn't know if there was anything ahead of her, but she had seen a house about a mile or so back, just way off the road. So she walked back, and she went up to the house, and as she got up to the house, it looked really familiar, and it was this white farmhouse, but of course, you know, a lot of farmhouses look similar. You know, there's a very sort of stereotypical sort of idea of what a white wooden farmhouse looks like. But, you know, I mean, there were, like, details that were really, really familiar to her. And she couldn't quite figure out exactly why it seemed so familiar. But anyway, so she went and knocked on the door to see if they could call, like, a garage, a gas station for them, or they could, a mechanic or something like that. And she knocked on the door, and the door opened, and there was an older lady there, and she took one look at her and slammed the door in her face. And, you know, she was like, that's weird, but, you know, I am a stranger and come up to their house. And so she knocked again and just said, hey, I'm really sorry. My car broke down. I'm not sure if it's gas or if something else. Can you just let me use your phone real quick to call someone to come out and help me? And they went and opened the door. The lady went and opened the door, and she knocked again a couple of times, and the lady was like, just go away. We don't want you here. And so she sort of got irritated. She was like, I just need to use your phone. Can you just call for me? And they're like, and the lady just said, just go away, and wouldn't reopen the door. And so she banged really hard on the door because she was, like, really irritated. And, you know, she still had that weird familiar feeling where, you know, things looked really familiar, like the paint was peeling in a way that looked familiar, and the gate had hung on the hinge in a way that looked familiar. And finally the door yanked open, and it was an older man with the lady behind him. He's like, we don't want you here, go away. And she's like, well, why? I just need your help. And the man was like, you haunt this house. And she just, like, her whole body just got covered in goosebumps, and she just ran. And every time I tell that story, I get goosebumps.
I have goosebumps.
I mean, all up the back of my neck, I just went. And it's just, because it's not like a scary thing, but, I mean, obviously it was for that couple.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine?
Well, the first time you told me that, I was like, whoa.
I know. It's such a cool story. And, you know, just that moment of, like, she knew that there were these deja vu moments, and it was kind of giving her a prickly, weird feeling, but she needed help, and she hadn't seen any other houses nearby. And
Yeah. That's a great one. And that's, like, the classic lady in white kind of haunting. So that's, like, that theme is really, that's such a great story.
Yeah.
Well, and now, Renee, you also have a couple tales with your own experiences.
Yes.
Here in Bristol. So tell us about that.
Yes. So these are good. So I live in a very old house. I'm in one of the oldest houses in Bristol. It's from the 1870s. And all of it is wooden floors, you know, and because it's an old house, you can hear everything in this house. Anyway, so when I was younger and I was taking piano lessons, our piano was down in the basement, and I used to go down there frequently to do my practicing for piano. And sometimes my mom would come down and sit on the couch and read or something while I practiced and just listen to me. Anyway, so we were doing that one day after school, so in the late afternoon, and I was practicing, and we heard footsteps upstairs. And we heard them walk, like, directly overhead of us on the wooden floors. And we were like, oh, my gosh, someone's broken in, and they don't realize that anyone's at home. And we'd had a couple of attempted break-ins in our house before, so we were like, that's what we thought. So we went out the basement door and went over to the neighbors and called the police to come. And we said, there's someone in our house. We heard them upstairs. And then, like, we were with our neighbors. We all went out in the street to watch to see what happened. And the police arrived, and they went into the house, and there was no sign of anyone. There was no one there. There was no sign of a break-in. Nothing had been taken. We hadn't seen anyone leave the house between the time we called and the police arriving. And we were like, oh. But our dachshund, Barney, was upstairs. And they're like, well, it must have been your dog. You know, you must have heard the dog. But, I mean, dachshunds are just, you know, you just hear the little click, 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 click of their little toenails as they go. So, I mean, they don't sound like footsteps. And honestly, if they're – and something we hadn't also thought about was – Barney was ferocious. So, you know, we were like, God, we must have just gone crazy or imagined it, or, you know, the house just must have creaked in just the right way or whatever. But it really, I mean, it was really distinctive footsteps. So my dad came home from work later that day, and my mom and I were telling him about it. We're like, and the person walked straight through the kitchen to the back of the house. And just as we said it, we were like, wait a second. Because there used to be a door between the kitchen and the back of the house. And now you have to go, like, all the way around, because we had boarded that up and put a closet there so you couldn't walk back into the other old part of the house. And the footsteps had gone straight through.
As if it were how the house used to be.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, man.
And so we're convinced that there was a ghost. And we had a lady who used to come in and clean in every once in a while. And she talked to the ghost because she heard it all the time when she was there. She named him Clarence. And I don't know if that was based on anything or if that's just what she called him, but she would tell him to stop because she would hear him. And she'd be like, now, Clarence, you stop this right now. I'm tired of hearing you. But she told us that. And, you know, I've had two or three other people who've been at our house who've said that they've heard things or seen something, just like, you know, that sort of out of the corner of your eye thing. And my dad has never believed any of it. He's an engineer, and, you know, he's all logical. And I mean, I'm super logical, but, you know, I believe some of this stuff. But, you know, he doesn't believe any of it. But then once, when I was visiting from England a few years before I moved back here, he was talking to me one day, and he's like, you know, I was sat at the computer table, which was in my old bedroom. And he's like, and I saw some movement out of the corner of my eye, and I turned thinking it was your mom. And he goes, but it wasn't. I'd forgotten your mom had gone out with Anna or her friend or something. And he's like, and I saw this lady in an old-fashioned gray dress go by the doorway. And I could only see her from, like, the sort of, like, the waist up. And he's like, but it's not a ghost. And I was like, well, what do you think that was, Dad? I mean, it wasn't, like, a thief. It wasn't a robber. It wasn't mom. It wasn't me. It wasn't the dog. But yeah, and he's like, well, I don't know. I don't really have an explanation for it, but I don't believe in ghosts.
Well, and of course, he told, saw one.
I think so. And, you know, he told me that right before I was home for like a week and a half from England. I could not sleep in comfortably for that whole time I was home. I was just waiting to see her.
That is so wild. Yeah. That really is. Yeah. So you probably have two ghosts, at least, in this house.
Well, but I'm not sure if Madeline ever saw Clarence or if she just decided it was a he.
Mm-hmm. So it could be the same one.
Could be the same one, I guess. But or it could be two. But they seem friendly, thankfully, knock on wood. And, you know, and it's so funny because I live in the basement now, which I used to be so scared of that basement. I mean, up until, like, college, I was still running, turning the lights off and running up the stairs like a banshee. And now I live down there, and I never thought I'd be able to do that.
Maybe with good reason, with all those ghosts floating around.
Yeah.
Thank you, Renee.
You're welcome.
In the night, there's ghost of you within my haunted heart. Ghost of you, my last romance, lips that laugh, eyes that dance. Haunted heart won't let me be. Dreams repeat a sweet.
Okay, so I also went to college at William & Mary in Williamsburg, Virginia. And, of course, that colonial period, lots of old buildings. And my freshman year, our RA arranged for us to go on a ghost tour. And, you know, you left at, like, 11:30, you got back at, like, 12:30 or 1, and you just walked around Williamsburg and they told you ghost stories. And there was this one place, and I can't remember exactly where it was, but it was near, I think, the governor's mansion or the Capitol building. And the story was that Lady Anne, who lived there, her husband and she had gone to a ball at the whichever of that important buildings that was nearby. I can't remember which one. And it was raining. It was cold weather. And she found out that night that he'd been cheating on her. He'd been committing infidelity and got very upset. And she ran home and lost her shoe on the way home and got a chill and died a few days later. And so the story was that you could go to the back of the house and take off your shoe and knock on the door and say, Lady Anne, I have your red shoe. And then you'd hear her coming down the stairs and, like, you'd hear one foot with a shoe on and one, like, stockinged foot.
Oh, man.
So, you know, we were stood in the back of this house having this told to us at, like, midnight. And I have an open mind about ghosts. So I was, like, pretty freaked out. But you know how you have those feelings sometimes that someone's watching you? And I just sort of felt it. So I had turned around and faced away from the house because I had felt it sort of behind me. And I was just sort of facing to the garden while I was listening to the story. Anyway, so skip ahead to my senior year, and I had a friend who gave ghost tours, and so he offered to give me one by myself one night, which was a huge mistake because I freaked myself completely out. But anyway, so we went on this ghost tour that night, and he took me to this house, and he told that whole story, and he goes, but that's not the real story, or that's not the whole truth. And he goes, because it's not the house that's haunted, it's the garden. And I was just remembering back to when I was a freshman and I'd had that feeling of someone watching from the garden bench at the end of the garden watching me and not feeling really uncomfortable. And then I just was like, we have to leave right now. And I just dragged him out of there because it just really freaked. It really scared me.
Oh, that is so scary.
Yeah.
Okay, folks, so joining me now is a fellow Birthplace of Country Music staff member, the museum assistant, museum manager, Myrissa Pierce.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hi.
So Myrissa has a really great Halloween story that she's going to share with us today. What's your story called?
The Old Steel Bridge in Siam.
Where's Siam at?
It's in Elizabethan, Tennessee, which is about 40, 45 minutes down the road. It's where I grew up and it's where I'm from.
Okay, awesome. Well, Myrissa, let's dive into this story.
All right. I grew up in Elizabethan, Tennessee, in a little tight-knit community known as Stony Creek. Down the road from where I grew up, there once was an old steel, one-lane bridge with a local story attached to it. And I won't lie, this bridge terrified me as a kid, and I stayed terrified of it as I grew older until they tore it down and built a new bridge. If you know me, then you know that I live for scary stories, legends, movies, etc., etc. But this bridge was different, and I'll mostly blame my mother for it because she would smack the side of the car as we drove across the bridge just to scare me even more. The bridge itself was built around the 1920s and quickly became the Lover's Lane area, as that was the spot for the couples to go for some privacy. And it would be that way until the early 1930s. That's when everything changed and tragedy struck. Legend starts with our young couple, the main characters of our story, Tom Jackson and Wanda Smithson, who decided to take advantage of the bridge and what the area was known for. People talked about how Tom was crazy about Wanda and that many believed he was going to propose to her that night. But neither of them realized that it was the last time that they would see one another. Wanda lived a very short distance from the bridge, only about 300 yards, and Tom came and picked her up from her home while her parents were asleep in bed, and they headed towards the bridge. After an hour of being there, they went to leave, but when they did, they saw a dark figure coming from the corner of the bridge. Tom and Wanda assumed it was another couple coming to the bridge and did not think anything of it. Soon they realized that it was just one person, and this person attacked them. The figure stabbed Wanda in the chest and it killed her instantly, and Tom tried to fight off the person but was stabbed several times, but was eventually able to get away. As he was escaping, he saw a car coming across the bridge and jumped into it. The driver was never identified but helped Tom escape, and the car drove off once Tom and the driver saw the person standing at the end of the bridge behind the car. Tom ended up dying of his injuries but was able to tell the story to the local police. The police went to the bridge to search the area but found nothing, not even Wanda's body. There wasn't even any blood or signs of an attack. They investigated for 15 months before making the case unsolved. 1977 was the year that the first reports of any paranormal activity was reported. Beecher Davis, who was a Gate City, Virginia deputy, told the Carter County Sheriff's Department that when he drove across the steel bridge, that his passenger side door flew open and slammed shut, and he noticed an indentation in his passenger seat as if someone was sitting in it.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah. Whoa. He then caught a glimpse of a dark figure in his rearview mirror and that it seemed to be coming closer and closer to his car, but more as if it were floating rather than walking. Beecher got out of his car and then he said that there wasn't anyone there, and that's when he got back into his car and rushed to the sheriff's station in a panic. Since Beecher's encounter, over 185 incidents have been reported. Other reports have said that on the anniversary of the attack, you can see a woman whose chest is bloodied and looks like she is dressed from the 1930s era, walking around the bridge. To this day, no one knows what happened that night, what happened to Wanda's body, or who the mysterious figure was. I never wanted to try to see if Tom would get in my car. As I said, this bridge has terrified me. I do know that I have a friend who tried it, and his door did open. He didn't see an indentation in his seat, and he didn't see a figure, but his door did open.
Wait, are you for real?
Yeah.
Oh my god. That's a lot.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Holy cow. Wow. So, when did you first hear this story?
As a child. Like, everybody in the area knows the legend, the story and everything, and... It's creepier when there's fog out.
Ooh, yeah.
Because where it's right on the river and everything, and when the fog's out, it's just, ugh.
Oh, man. Love it. Marissa, thank you so much for sharing a very scary, spooky local legend with us
here. I'll have to take you to the bridge now.
I don't know about that.
Well, the steel bridge itself was torn down, but we'll go during the day.
We'll go when it's sunshiny and there's a rainbow out. Yeah.
There's a rainbow, yeah.
She knew.
So now we have Charlene in here talking about ghost stories. Charlene, welcome to Mountain Song and Story. I'm so excited to have you here.
I'm so excited to be here with my one of my favorite people in the world.
So you have no lack of a million ghost stories.
I have a lot of ghost stories. Well, the paranormal is something I'm very interested in.
Yeah.
I've loved ghost stories since I was a kid. I've been on ghost hunts. I did an entire, we called it the Baker Family Road Trip of the Supernatural through West Virginia pre-pandemic, and it was fabulous. But yeah, I have a few stories.
Okay, yeah. I'm so excited. So let's start with the one you were just telling me about, the Star Museum in Abingdon. Tell us about that.
Okay, the Star Museum in Abingdon does not exist anymore, although I think there's still, you know, evidence of it online. But my very dear and close friend, one of my besties, Robert Weisfeld, his family was the owner of the old Washington County Press. And they ran the paper out of this building and eventually sold. This is, you know, his father passed and then eventually his mother passed. And he lived upstairs, but he was a great collector of all this old Hollywood memorabilia, costume pieces, odd ephemera, and a great storyteller. So like you always wanted to just kind of go tour the museum and do the Weisfeld tour to hear him tell about the items of in his collection. So you should have him on the show to talk about that. But anyway, we did a ghost hunt there. It was my birthday and the Appalachian Ghost Hunters showed up. It was very legit. Tracy Childress in our office was there. A couple other friends, and during the visit, I don't remember the questions we were asking, but there were people with the dowing rods in one part of the building doing certain things. There were other people, kind of throughout. And his apartment upstairs, I will preface to say that, my daughter had an experience up there, and I'll tell that one later, but So we're on the back steps leading up to the upstairs apartment, and you kind of would ask a question, and then you would hear these very distinct knocks coming from his apartment, and it would just be and for yes and for no. It was very distinct. And then after, you know, a while of the answers and the question, you would hear it just get a little fainter until it just stopped. But we were probably there for about 15 minutes interacting with whatever this is. Robert would have to tell you, like, who he thinks the entities are, but there's more than one in that building. And he lived up there for a few years, so... Ooh, yeah. And, you know, Robert, like I said, we're very close friends, and, you know, my daughter, she was very young at the time, probably like 3 or 4 years old. It was around Christmas time one year, and... Yeah, he's one of these people, you know, he just has so, he collects so many things and he has so much stuff. And he would just, you know, collect things from around the house and he would give them as presents. So he's like, I have a few things for Callie and why don't you bring her over and I'll give them to her. And I was like, oh, that'd be great. Sure. So, you know, like I said, she's 3 or 4 at the time. 4, I believe, actually, because she could talk really well. And, you know, you go kind of visit in his kitchen or his dining room table. That's what you do, and you do your thing. And you know, as you walk up, like, the hallway in the back of the building to go up into the apartment, it's just one long hallway. And you can see, you know, all the rooms are sort of off to the right. And then you can see down to the end, which would be the front of the building, and his bedroom was there at that front. And as we're leaving, we're in the hallway saying our goodbyes, and Callie looks down and she says, Mommy, who's that? And I look at, you know, there's nobody there. And, you know, Robert very, you know, he sort of like, you know, eyeballs me a little. He's like, well, how many people do you see? And she said, 4.
Oh, my God.
And he's, you know, and I don't remember exactly. He didn't want to scare her. You know, we just kind of looked at each other, but she plainly saw something down in the doorway where his bedroom was. And he said, well, you know, I have all kinds of visitors all the time, Callie. And, you know, they sometimes they say hi and sometimes they don't. And we just left it at that. She didn't ask any questions. It didn't frighten her. It was, you know, I didn't have, like, I got a little chill after that happened, but I never felt anything negative or, you know, bad in that place, I guess. But
oh, my God. God, yeah, that gave me chills. Like, yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, my daughter, she has a little bit of it. I think she had a little bit of the, I think she's growing out of the sight, I guess. But, you know, she's seen some things in our house. You know, she, in the middle of the night, woke up a few years ago. Maybe she was around 8 or 9. She's 13 now. And she said there was, like, sort of the, that if you hear a lot of ghost stories, you hear about the old hag. A lot of people have a lot of very common things that they see. There's, you know, the old hag is one of them, and it's usually not a good thing. But she said she woke up and the end of her bed faces the hallway, you know, and she saw this woman, girl with really dirty hair and stringy hair, and she was holding a teddy bear in a white dirty nightgown, just kind of looking at her. And she, you know, she opened her eyes, she saw it, and she closed her eyes, opened her eyes again, still there, closed her eyes, opened again, it was gone. Oof. Yeah, so, yeah, that was one incident. And then the bathroom is literally, like, right across. There's two bathrooms, but the one she was in was right across the hall. And a few, maybe a year later or a month or a few months later, she said that, you know, in the middle of the night, she goes to use the restroom and she leaves the door open because she can see her bedroom, you know. And she was finishing up and she says she looked up and she thought she saw her dad in the hallway in his underwear with his hands on his hips like he was angry, like she was out of bed. The thing was, when she looked, he didn't have a face.
Oh, my God.
It was like sort of she felt the angry, but there was no face. And so, yeah, so and he was asleep. You know, I don't know how she left the bathroom to go back to her room. I guess apparently it just, she either didn't want to see it and looked away, and then it disappeared, but she ended up going back to her bed. And,
oh, my God.
So, yeah, that was pretty frightening for her.
There is those, that reminds me of those other stories about, like, the changelings, where it's, like, people that you, like, it's you, it's Charlene, and you're in this room right now, but then, like,
but it's, not,
you, it's not really you. It's, like, this other thing.
The doppelgangers.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, that's, all those kind of stories like that freak me out so bad because, like, I've heard a lot of those stories. Oh, man.
Or you hear, like, someone calling from you from another room, and you think it's, like, your mother or something, and it's not. And they're not there. Yeah.
Oh, that, like, ooh, that gives me, like, yeah. It's pretty cold in this room right now. We're in the Radio Bristol studio, but I have chills.
I have chills on top of the chills.
So many chills.
Just moved in my new house today. But I got squared away. Bell started ringing and chains rattled out. I knew I'd moved in a haunted house. Still I made up in my mind to stay. Nothing was gonna drive me away. When I seen something to give me the creep. One big eye and a two big feet.
Yeah, it's another, like, this is a kind of a funny thing that's happened at our house. And, okay, I'm not going to say this was a ghostly activity. I just think it's one of those things that you're just kind of like, this is weird. But we had this receiver that we had all of our television, you know, stereo, everything hooked up through this receiver. So whenever we turned on the TV to watch TV, you would have to turn this thing on to adjust the volume so you could hear whatever you were watching. So Callie, whenever she would go to bed, I would always be very careful about the volume in the house because, you know, it's an old house, but sound from the TV travels right up the stairway. It's a tiny house, and her bed is, like, right above our living room, and, you know, it's just, you can hear everything. And so I was always really careful, especially when there were scenes that were, you know, bad words and things like that. Because, you know, me and her father watch more adult content sometimes. And so we didn't want to hear, Mom, what were you watching? You know. So we'd turn it down. But, like, every now and then this happened, especially when we were watching something that was a little more racy. The volume, it would just slowly sort of turn up, and it would be really loud, like this.
Whoa. Oh.
And you would have to get up and turn it down. And the thing about it is, our remote control never worked. Like the buttons got stuck in a certain position, and, like, we got food in it or something, so it never really worked. So we would have to get up and turn it up and down anyway. But you would see the numbers on the receiver, the digital readout. It would just go, and then, like, be really loud. And of course it's during a scene where something not appropriate is happening, and that happened again and again. And we moved the receiver downstairs to the basement when we got a new setup upstairs as, like, our video game, whatever. And it is so funny, it almost never happens now, because, like, there's only Tim goes down there to watch sports, my husband, and so he watches sports. But there are times when we're watching a movie that, and it's always during, like, a racy scene, the volume will turn up.
That is so weird.
Like, Tim thinks I'm crazy. He's like, ah, it's just something with the receiver. I'm like, but don't you think it's weird that since we moved it downstairs, we don't use it as much, it doesn't happen very often, and we don't watch movies down there very often. Because the bathroom, you know, an old house, it's like, we have three levels, but all the bathrooms are up on the top floor with the bedrooms. So, yeah. So that's another little thing.
Oh, yeah. You also have a story about, well, stories about Solar Hill here in Bristol.
A couple.
Yeah.
I lived, before I was married, and, you know, before I bought the house we live in now, I lived in a couple of places on Solar Hill. One of them, you know, the Greystone, which is up from the church. But my other apartment, which is on Solar Hill, I don't want to disclose where it is because the things that happened weren't in that house. It was in a couple of neighbors' houses, and they still live there. So I don't want to, you know, people, ooh, that, you know. And the owners of the one house are probably newer owners. They may not even know this story, so I don't want to, yeah.
Well, they know now. They're going to know now.
Yeah. So it was probably the mid, late 90s when I moved from the Greystone to this apartment on the second floor of, you know, an old, beautiful Victorian over on Solar Hill. And next door, this house next door had been empty for a very long time. And I'd heard that the lady that owned the house had passed some time ago, and it was just there. I guess the family owned it, didn't know what to do with it. And then I'd heard, you know, that she basically just lived in the downstairs area because she couldn't afford to heat the whole thing. You know, she was there by herself. It was a beautiful two-story house. But, you know, it had these lace curtains and the upstairs windows. And every time I just kind of looked out my bedroom window over there, I don't know, you just get a feeling someone's looking at you or watching you. And I had sort of these lacy curtains that came in the apartment that I lived in. I didn't change them out for a while. So, like, if I was dressing or something, like, I would just go to the bathroom. Like, I just felt weird. I'm like, somebody's, you know. And it was always this one window toward the back of the house that I always looked at. Eventually, someone did buy the house, and they were doing some renovations over there. And the new owner, I met him and his wife, and they were lovely. And he was so creative. The house was gorgeous. And they decided to do one of the Christmas open houses, which I'm a looky-loo. I want to see. I love, like, all those old houses. And if there's an opportunity for me to get in to see, I will take it. So, and as a neighbor, it was like, I'm just going to slip over there and maybe bring some cookies or something. So I go, and we were just talking about the house, and we had looked, you know, around, and it was just gorgeous, decorated for Christmas, and it smelled like cinnamon. It was gorgeous. And so we were talking to the new owners, and I remember asking, you know, ooh, does anything spooky ever happen to this house? Because I get a, you know, I just have like a vibe there. I don't know what, but he's like, well, it's kind of funny that you ask. When we were doing construction on the house, he said that he had gone upstairs on the second floor at the end of the hall. Like, there's a door to the attic space that goes up. It's just a regular door. It's not a creepy, like, it's just a door that opens. There's a little staircase, and it goes up to the third floor attic. And he saw a little boy run up into the attic. He thought it was just one of the construction people brought their kid to work, you know. Didn't even really think about it until they were on their way out. And he asked the contractor, you know, where's the kid? Or did he, you know, why wasn't he in school? And he said, what kid? Like, there's no kid. So,
oh my gosh.
And then another one of the construction workers saw the kid. So then, they'd been in the house for a little while, and then they had put in an intercom system, because it's a, you know, those are 12-foot ceilings, and it's just really easier to, like, if you want somebody's upstairs not to yell. So they put in this intercom system, and sometimes they would be watching TV, and someone from upstairs would be trying to use, it would just be like, and whispery, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, nobody was there. And it would happen from time to time. Well, you know, the couple, you know, they adopted a few kids. They'd always wanted kids, and for whatever reason could not have them. And then they adopted, I think they ended up adopting 3 or 4. And, you know, he said that all the activity had kind of stopped at that point. But Bud Phillips, the famous Bristol historian, also lived on Solar Hill. And I would talk to him because I lived in the neighborhood, and I loved to sit on his porch, and he would tell stories or whatever. So I asked him about that house years later, and he said, well, I think that there was some sort of a fire in that house at some point, and that a young boy had run upstairs into the attic to escape the flames, but he passed of smoke inhalation.
Oh, my God.
Ba-da-ba-tsh.
Oh, dang. That's
yeah.
I'm freaked
out. Yeah. And there's another house still on the same street, just a few houses down from this one, And the couple who lives there now, they've lived there forever and ever. You know, they have had, I don't think they've had any activity in a while, but at some point they had like a mischievous ghost that would hide their keys and things like that. And they would find them in like just random places, like months later, like just items from the home where they would never ever find whatever they were missing.
I need a ghost to like find my keys for me and yeah. like, you know.
Hey, if you're going to live in my house rent free, you better be useful.
Help like, me out. Yeah, yeah. I lose my keys enough without having something else taking them.
Right. It doesn't need to be in the vortex yeah. or wherever you're from. But yeah, so those are a few of my ghost stories. I mean, I don't think I've had anything. I haven't seen anything directly, like any apparitions, God, not God, you know, I really don't care to. But I love ghost stories. I love when they happen around me. Mm-hmm. And a lot have happened around me or in my circle.
All right, Charlene. Well, thank you so much for being here. This has been so much fun. I know you have more, but we'll have to dive into those off mic.
We'll do that off mic, or maybe save them for next Halloween.
Yeah, there'll and be plenty.
Yeah, we'll do another show later.
Thanks, Charlene.
Thank you for having me, Tony. This is fun.
Don't be here when the morning comes. See, yes, I'll be here when the morning comes. I'll be right here and I ain't gonna run.
All right, folks, so now I've got another guest here to tell some spooky stories. Erica Barker, welcome.
Hi, happy to be here.
Erica, of course, works at the museum as well. And you brought a story from your childhood, correct?
Yes. So unlike a lot of the other staff members, I didn't have an actual scary story from my experience, but I do have a favorite childhood story that was a Halloween storybook that my mom used to read to me like 100 times every October. So I thought I'd share that.
What's it called?
The story is called The Little Old Lady Who Was Not Afraid of Anything by Linda Williams, illustrated by Megan Lloyd. It's a great little children's book that I just always think of every October.
Wonderful. Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay. So once upon a time, there was a little old lady who was not afraid of anything. One windy afternoon, the little old lady left her cottage and went for a walk in the woods to collect herbs and spices and nuts and seeds. She walked so long and so far that it started to get dark. There was only a sliver of moon shining through the night. The little old lady started to walk home. Suddenly, she stopped. Right in the middle of the path were two big shoes, and the shoes went clomp, clomp. "Get out of my way, you two big shoes. I'm not afraid of you," said the little old lady. On she walked down the path, but behind her she could hear two shoes go clomp, clomp. A little further on, the little old lady stumbled into a pair of pants, and the pants went, "Wiggle, wiggle! Get out of my way, you pair of pants! I'm not afraid of you," said the little old lady, and she walked on. But behind her, she could hear two shoes go clomp, clomp, and one pair of pants go, "Wiggle, wiggle!" Further still, the little old lady bumped into a shirt, and the shirt went, "Shake, shake! Get out of my way, you silly shirt. I'm not afraid of you," said the little old lady. And on she walked, a little bit faster. But behind her, she could hear two shoes go clomp, clomp. One pair of pants go wiggle, wiggle. And one shirt go shake, shake. A little ways on, the little old lady came upon two white gloves and a tall black hat. And the gloves went clap, clap. And the hat went nod, nod. "Get out of my way, you two white gloves and you tall black hat. I'm not afraid of you," she said. And on she walked just a little bit faster. But behind her, she could hear two shoes go clomp, clomp. One pair of pants go wiggle, wiggle. One shirt go shake, shake. And two gloves go clap, clap. And one hat go nod, nod. By now, the little old lady was walking at quite a fast pace. She was very near her cottage when she was startled by a very huge, very orange, very scary pumpkin head. And the head went, "Boo!" "Boo!" This time, the little old lady did not stop to talk. She didn't stop at all. She ran. But behind her, she could hear two shoes go clomp, clomp. One pair of pants go wiggle, wiggle. One shirt go shake, shake. Two gloves go clap, clap. and one hat go nod, nod, and one scary pumpkin head go boo, boo. The little old lady did not look back. She ran as fast as she could and didn't stop to catch her breath until she was safe inside her cottage with the door locked. She sat in her chair by the fire and she rocked, and it was so quiet in her cottage before the knock, knock on the door. Should she answer it? Well, she was not afraid of anything, so she went to the door and opened it. And what do you think she saw? Two shoes go clomp, clomp. One pair of pants go wiggle, wiggle. One shirt go shake, shake. Two gloves go clap, clap. One hat go nod, nod. And one scary pumpkin head go boo, boo. I'm not afraid of you, said the little old lady bravely. What do you want anyway?
We've come to scare you.
You can't scare me, said the little old lady.
Then what's to become of us?
The pumpkin head suddenly looked unhappy. I have an idea, said the little old lady, and she whispered into the pumpkin's ear. The pumpkin head nodded, and its face seemed to brighten. The little old lady said goodnight, closed the door, and whistled on her way to bed. The next morning, she woke up early, went to her window, and looked out into the garden. And what do you think she saw? Two shoes go clomp, clomp. One pair of pants go wiggle, wiggle. One shirt go shake, shake. Two gloves go clap, clap. And one hat go nod, nod. And one scary pumpkin head go boo, boo. And it scared all the crows away. I used to love that story because my mom would sort of act it out and like... I was attempting to do in the radio studio here, which I know no one can see.
But. You nailed it. You nailed it. Yes. That's awesome. That's such a lovely story.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't say I wouldn't be scared of a pumpkin head creature.
If there were floating crows following me through the woods, I think I would have started running a lot sooner than she did.
Oh, yeah. Thanks so much, Erica. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah.
Well, out in the country, we didn't have mortuaries, and so it was always customary for the undertaker to do his job and lay your kin out right there at home. Yeah, and the church would loan you folding chairs, and you'd have visitation and everything right there. But when the nighttime come, you'd have to sit up with the dead, 'cause it wasn't right to leave them alone. Well, the last time I set up was 65 when my old arthritic Uncle Fred died. He was 97, so stooped over, the mortician couldn't straighten him out. They used a log and chain to hold him down, covered that all up with a cape and a gown, and didn't tell nobody in the family, 'cause that's the kind of stuff folks just don't want to know about. Well, we were all sitting there, it was 3 in the morning. And then there come up a cloud of thunder, lightning, and storming. Well, that lightning flashed and that thunder clapped, and that chain round old Uncle Fred went snap, rattled and fell to the floor with a thump, and Uncle Fred just sat right up. And I ain't setting up with the dead no more. I don't know about you. No, I ain't setting up with the dead no more, no matter what you say or do. They say the dead can't hurt you 'cause they already left, but what they left can sure make you hurt yourself. And I ain't sitting up with the dead no more since the dead started sitting up too. Lord have mercy. Well, when Uncle Fred sat up, so did everyone there. And there came a great parting of the folding chairs, and that preacher nearly knocked me down. He said, oh, I'm heading out that kitchen door. I hollered, Reb, that kitchen ain't got no door in it. He said, don't worry, son, it will have in a minute. And I ain't never seen so much jumping and shoving before. And then somebody stepped on an old cat's tail. He let out a scream, a screech, a wail, and to say the least, that howl didn't help to calm the situation down. And then that lightning flashed, and that house went black, and I spoke to my feet. I said, boys, make tracks. And I went through that screen door, licking and split for town. Whoa. Well, I cut through the cemetery, fell in a hole.
It was Uncle Fred's grave, and it was dark and cold. Yeah, the town drunk dug it, and he dug it too deep. And unbeknownst to me, he's still in there asleep. And I'm scratching and jumping, trying to get out of that hole. And he woke up and said, "You might as well come over here and sit down beside me, boy, because you ain't getting out of here tonight."
But I did. I ain't set in love with the dead no more. I don't know about you. No, I ain't set in love with the dead no more.
No matter what you say or do.
They say the dead can't hurt you cause they already left. But what they left can sure make you hurt yourself. And I ain't set in love with the dead no more since the dead started setting up too.
Wasn't no sense in nobody setting up with Uncle Fred anyhow. Uncle Fred dummy gonna set up with his own self. Next time, I'm just gonna send flowers. Yeah.
All right, folks. Sitting Up with the Dead there by Ray Stevens to take us out this hour here on Mountain Song and Story. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. Remember, you can catch this program, Mountain Song and Story, every Thursday at 4 o'clock right here each and every single week on Radio Bristol. Special thanks to all of the voices and the variety of guests you heard on today's show who shared their stories. Renee Rogers, Myrissa Pierce, Charlene Baker, and Erica Barker. Next week, I'll be featuring more spooky Halloween stories I've collected from friends. So if you liked what you heard on today's show, please tune in next Thursday for another program just like the one today. Today's playlist can be found on the Mountain Song and Story program blog page on over at listenradiobristol.org, where you can also listen to archived programs. Folks, once again, my name is Toni Doman. Thank you so much for tuning in. It was so much fun to put this program together today. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have a Halloween story that you think I'd like to hear, please get in contact with me via info@birthplaceofcountrymusic.org. I would love to hear from you and feature your story on future programs. info@birthplaceofcountrymusic.org will get your message to me. I have got to get on out of here, but I will catch you right here next week.
Haunted heart won't let me be. Dreams repeat a sweet but lonely song to me. Dreams are dust, it's you who must.